Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are going to wrap up, I believe we'll be able to wrap up the amendments. There's some things that we need to kind of go back and do, but first off, let me kind of let you know that there are some really important things that you don't know, things that are happening or things that are looming that people just don't understand. And the Chinese Communist Party, this is what I've mentioned this before, that when I start railing on the Chinese Communist Party, it seems like all of a sudden, because I haven't had a denial of service connecting to the Red State Talk radio server when we broadcast, because even though I may be replaying something because I've got something to do, we actually do these things live. We actually connect with the server when this show is airing right now at this point in time. So we've connected. And when I start railing and haranguing the communist Chinese, the Chai Coms, the Chinese Communist Party, then they typically start hitting us with denials of service like within a week or so. And all of a sudden we have to do some resets on our servers and so forth because we just cannot figure out why, how we're not getting connected other than the fact that I think they're just actually hitting the very specific port that I use. So anyway, and I've worked in a technical world and I've had networkers, and networking is just one of those things that I will, I don't want to say I will never get. I do understand fundamentals of networking, but I just don't understand the hacking and that type of stuff, because I've actually had certified ethical hackers, if you believe it or not. There's actually such a thing as ethical hackers, but anywho, we're going to start exposing more crap that China is doing, just so you understand and put this in perspective, because some of the things we need to really help people understand in the next couple of weeks regarding this election is that China is the greatest threat. They are the model society for the globalists. You have to understand, I've said this before, when they started implementing this Big Brother concept and rolled it out, actually, it's been rolled out through China this year. And is that a coincidence that they were able to prove their theory this year, in addition to being able to deploy a global biological weapon? Anyway, so we're going to focus a bit on China. So what that means is I may actually be denied service coming up here. And so with that, I'm just preparing you. If you all of a sudden get either dead air and or so typically when you get dead air, that means that we have been really brought down. But if you get some other type of show during the Reclaiming the Republic time frame, then we're being hit, we're being affected. So so there's the two levels of that. Just wanted to kind of make you aware of that, because every time I harangue on China, there's this ramification from that. Because I haven't been hit, we haven't been affected for a couple of months because I haven't said peep or boo about China. They are the enemy, or I should say they're the front of the enemy. They're not a facade. They are the real front of the enemy, and we need to let you know what the heck's going on regarding China, even in our own backyard. So with that, I'd also need to remind you that this show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you know why you come here. This is where you actually can learn and start understanding the Constitution in a way that, you know, basically takes it from this, you know, ink on parchment to something that actually has some tangible tangible, what's the word I'm looking for? the Constitution has some tangible protections, some tangible functions regarding your liberty. There is, it actually is a, there's a symbiotic relationship, or similar to a symbiotic relationship, the Constitution. And when we're in the, when we're in compliance and alignment with the Constitution, we are living in a state of liberty. When all of a sudden we surrender these liberties for security purposes because we don't want to get the coronavirus, the COVID-19, then what we are doing is we are surrendering our liberties to tyranny, and we're violating the essence of, because it, you know, if you're a germaphobe like me, and anybody that worked for me knows me, then they know that I can be a germaphobe. I don't want anybody, and you've heard me rail on this. If you're sick, keep your butt home. There's no reason why you need to continue to affect the herd. And so I don't like getting sick. I do not like being non-productive. I don't like not feeling good. I don't like not firing on all cylinders. I like being healthy, and I like being, you know, boiling at 212 degrees Fahrenheit, which is the optimum potential of water. And so I, as a human being, I want to operate at my optimum potential. Who doesn't? So anywho, what we want to do is we want to help you understand how the Constitution has such a cause and effect in our life and in our society, because as we've seen the abandonment of following the Constitution, we see how government is dictating so many facets of our life. So you have a right to walk out with a mask if you want to. Government does not have a right to tell you you must have one. And you have to put it on your face. You have to wear it. They don't have the right to do these things. And so that's why we hope that as you come here, you start learning, as you start listening to the show, you start learning where your rights begin and where other rights end. And in context to the government, that is one of the most important things you have to understand, which is why we've gone through the Constitution and the amendments, so that you understand the importance of the 14th Amendment. More importantly, as we've been going through and plugging through and giving you all this information, we're trying to make sure that you keep in the forefront of your mind your actually, I'd say role and responsibility, but I'd even say more importantly than that, your opportunity, the blessing that the First Amendment petition for the redress of grievance has in your life, and how you can actually use these things within the Constitution to help us move government back into the, to get the genie back into the bottle. I was going to say get the government back into the bottle, but unconstitutional government is the genie, and the genie has been luring us with the siren song. Oh, just give me a little more power and I can do this for you. And give me a little more power and I can do this for you. I can tell you the counterculture revolution and these idiots, these stooges like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, and these rock and roll stars of the counterculture revolution, even though we liked their music when we were growing up, if you can't see what those guys were doing, then, you know, you need to start taking a look at what they really did. They actually got people to start rejecting government, and then eventually they took us full circle around, and now they're saying, oh, we've got to surrender to the Borg. Sorry, that's a little Star Trek reference, but anyway, one of the things we want to do is make sure that you understand the opportunities that we have, that we still can exercise in forcing common law grand juries to help us clean up. We're going to get into the details more and more on common law grand juries, what they are. And actually, I'm working with somebody, a person in the leadership team, and actually it's kind of down in the leadership team. I don't know where, but here's a person that I've met. We've had engagements, and we've had discussions, and we're going to be working together to try to distill a common law grand jury, how to initiate one. So it's kind of like connecting the dots and painting by colors, or, you know, actually painting by numbers, not by colors. I'm sorry. But, I mean, you kind of understand how we want to make this thing foolproof so that you can actually, you know, with a in the Marine Corps, when we deployed and went into places where English was not the standard language, they'd give us this thing called a pointy talkie card. You'd point to a line and you'd show it to the person, and then that person would know exactly what you were trying to communicate. And so that's what we want to do. We want to give you a pointy talkie card or a connecting the dots type of art or painting by colors so that it's just foolproof. We want a foolproof process for everybody to be able to just take it and run. And then, believe me, I understand, because in the Marine Corps, we had to make things Marine-proof so that even a Marine couldn't get it wrong. And that's self-effacing of your own service, because 9 times out of 10, it's easy for inter-service rivalry to be pinging and poking each other in the eyes and so forth. So instead of pinging on my sibling or my sister services, I will just do some self-effacing. Anyway, we want to thank you for tuning in, and we want to actually beg you to help keep people apprised and keep them tuning in, or at least start having them download to our podcast. When we come back, and actually I need to update our podcast, so we'll get that taken care of this weekend. I will be back right after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
One of the things I don't do all the time is to help people understand, what are those three C's that I keep mentioning? And it's really simple. When I do have callers, when I do have people on the show, the three C's is this. Confidentiality. If you know me by name or you know me personally, let's keep that confidential. Secondly, is concise. When you do call, try to be concise, or when we're talking, because an hour goes by really fast, and even I have a problem being concise, but I ask everybody to try, at least I try. And then the other one is civil. I I expect civility. I don't try to attack people, and I don't appreciate being attacked. So usually those three things can be cause for me to just disconnect from somebody. Anyway, the next article is actually one of the original Bills of Rights. And I believe, let me see, I'd have to go all the way back up, and we'll do that. I believe this may have been the actual Second Amendment, but because it wasn't ratified until 1992, it is the 27th Amendment. This was proposed in 1789, and again, it was comprising of the Bill of Rights, and it's a very simple amendment. No law varying the compensation for the services of the senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of representatives shall have intervened. In other words, they can't necessarily, they can vote themselves a raise, which I have a problem with, but I do have a problem with having it controlled by the House or by the states, because some states may provide inequitable emoluments where, you know, the states may starve their senators, or states may overcompensate for them to, you know, we're going to give you more money to allow them to have the control over this. However, I think that what we should have is that and as a matter of fact, I'm going to do this really, really quick, because I think that this is the best way to articulate this, because I'm going to Google this. The average salary of the U.S. And so it'll come up with a number, 56,000. So I believe that maybe somewhere between 56,000 and or where they're being paid should probably be more requisite. As a matter of fact, maybe there should be a constitutional amendment, and I'm not an advocate for constitutional amendments, but I do believe the compensation really does need to be curbed, and especially if we can lower the overhead costs of our government. In other words, and we're going to get into an upcoming amendment that's still out there that can be ratified, and it's a part of the Bill of Rights. Actually, it's the first amendment that was submitted. If we get this one amendment passed, we can realistically start looking at the emoluments for Congress and actually look at the representatives and senators and making sure that they're paid requisite. And we'll talk about that in just a second. So anyway, there we go. That was the 27th, and that was the final amendment as far as the lists of amendments go. But when we look at the Bill of Rights, and the Bill of Rights having two amendments that were in it, and we already covered the one, which actually, I'm correct, it was the Second Amendment that was ratified as the 27th. Isn't that interesting? That the states, when they ratified supposedly, quote-unquote, the Bill of Rights, because there were two amendments that weren't ratified, or there were a total of 12 amendments in the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment became the 27th, and the First Amendment, I'm hoping, becomes the 28th. I'm a huge supporter of this one amendment. This one amendment is, this is the text of the amendment. After the first enumeration required by the first article of the Constitution, there shall be one representative for every 30,000 until the number shall amount to 100, after which the proportion shall be so regulated by Congress that there shall be not less than 100 representatives, nor less than one representative for every 40,000 persons until the number of representatives shall amount to 200, after which the proportion shall be regulated by Congress so that there shall not be less than 200 representatives, nor more than one representative for every 50,000 persons. So in other words, your congressman, your representative in the House of Representatives in Congress right now is regulated by 100, actually, I believe it's almost 800,000 people. It's 700 some odd thousand. And I can look it up. I'm not going to Google it right now, but or DuckDuckGo it. But The point in fact is that if you do the math on that, that's more than 10 times more than what this amendment would recommend. If you want to displace the swamp, if you want to make it harder for government to do the bad things that they want to do, then we need to pass this amendment. Because the House of Representatives, if you have 50,000 people, in other words, a representative in the House of Representatives cannot represent more than 50,000. So once you get to 50,001, then that district needs to be split up. And what this would mean is that Wyoming would no longer have one representative. Wyoming would have, 10, 11, who knows? I think currently they're around 500,000. And so what this does is it also increases the number of electors, so that instead of it being 270, and I want you to really think about this. If we actually gave representation down to the county level, what would that do to the Electoral College? Now, think, my friends, as we look at the red counties of America and the red representation, we would probably find that it would be very hard for the electors to be able to actually come up with, or I should say the blue, the progressives, it would be very hard for them to come up with enough electors to win an election, because the popular vote would be further out the window. And that we have to address the winner-takes-all scheme, because the winner-takes-all steals many, many, many representatives for a particular. So like Oregon, every single elector in Washington State, in California, every single elector gets thrown into the tank for the blue side. If we started taking the electors that would not have those congressional districts that would not have voted for that progressive secular communist that's on the Democratic ticket, then there is a great likelihood that we would shift the presidency for years to come in being a conservative, fiscally conservative, and hopefully moving everybody towards constitutional conservative. So there is an organization out there, and I want to introduce them to you, and they're called Our First Right. I had Aaron Lee Williams on the phone, and I know that the chair or the leadership, because I think she was the chair, or at least she was a key leader that we actually had on air with her, or we had her on air with you. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to get this amendment passed. There are, I believe, 11 states currently that have actually passed this amendment, ratified it. So what does that mean? That means that we need to get 27 states. Well, here we go. So one of the things that I am working on is as soon as we actually get a state to convene and start pushing for republic review, the two things that we want that state to instantly do is to ratify this amendment. Second thing we want the state to do is to rescind the 17th Amendment. And so and I'm hoping and praying, it's Wyoming, South Dakota, it will be a dark red state. But once they've taken the position that they're going to audit the Constitution and they're going to start demanding all their sibling states to start joining with them and rescinding, if they have an application for the Article 5 process, Wyoming, South Dakota, or whichever the state is, they will demand that this other states that join in will rescind their Article 5 convention petition so that they're no longer seeking any amendments to the Constitution. They're only seeking enforcement. So that what that does is it pushes amendment discussion literally out into the nethersphere, into where it just becomes philosophical discussions while we obtain compliance, that there's no threat looming of a balanced, stupid balanced budget amendment. We don't need a balanced budget amendment. As I say in my promo, what we need is the government to spend the money on the things they, on only the things that they have the enumerated power to spend money on, which is basically defense. So, as we start getting this momentum building with Republic Review, this is one of those. And when we come back after this coming break, we're going to get into the other amendment, but we're not recommending a ratification. We're recommending the rescission of. Now, and I'll go into the details on this, and we'll actually pull it up so that you can kind of get the gist of it. We want you to get really smart on how we can actually start pushing and moving in the right direction. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, so we've been covering the amendments and the Constitution, as I just said. And one of the things we're also included this time around is we're including the failed amendments. And we kind of went through the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights. Actually, we haven't gone through that. I've got to go back through that. I'm waiting for that to go through that last. We've covered the anti-title or the original 13th Amendment, which, again, there's, you know, a lot of people that are proving that this thing was actually ratified. Then there is the anti-slavery, or not the anti-slavery, the slavery amendment that Lincoln tried to propose to actually galvanize slavery in the Constitution so that there would never be an amendment to the Constitution to remove the states' rights of slavery. And then there was the child labor amendment that we kind of laid out there that the states really rejected. And this was after the state or the federal government had already started usurping under Teddy Roosevelt with the Labor Department, or actually I think it was the Commerce and Labor Department. The states recognize, hey, they're getting a little bit too far. And so but the problem is the states at any point in time when they tried to do some of these nefarious amendments like the Child Labor Amendment, how come? Why is it that the states at that point didn't wake up and just say, hey, hold on, you're already doing too many things you shouldn't do? It's just because it wasn't as evil as it is today, where the government is literally telling us that good is evil and evil is good. We've just gone through the Equal Rights Amendment, and what we're going to go through is coming up on the Washington, D.C. Voting Rights Amendment. It's essentially creating a statehood out of Washington, D.C. And we've already kind of shown how they've been moving this gradually forward through the amendment process. Anyway, so the next one is an inoperative amendment. It was proposed in 1972 and it expired in 1982. And again, this is the Equal Rights Amendment. And so Section 1, equal rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged. And I believe we went through this last, but I want to go through this again because what they did was they put an expiration or a sunset to this amendment. They never did this before. And what they tried to do, because they knew that if they put some urgency to this, people would feel more compelled to pass an amendment. This thing's going to no longer be available if we don't get it now. Hurry up. And that didn't work. Anyway, Section 1, equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I've said this before. I don't believe there should ever be the ability for the government to be able to meddle with anything. As a matter of fact, I think that what we need to have is just the government has no right to create programs, to regulate, to make any law respecting gender and race, ethnicity, religion, and those types of things. As far as the general government goes, the general government has no business being involved in any facet of our personal life or domestic issues. Section 2, the Congress shall have the power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. Section 3, this amendment shall take effect 2 years after the date of ratification. See, why did they even throw that in? Because once a amendment, maybe there was the pushback was, this is going to have some real instant effects on people. So, we'll give you a 2-year prep time to stop being a misogynist or stop being a misandrist. And as a matter of fact, today our problem in society is not misogyny. Our problem in society is misandrist. We have too many misandrists. We have too many people that hate men and the all things masculine. If we don't have a balance between the feminine and masculine in our society, then we're going to go down the wrong path. It can't be a male dominant or a female dominant. We have to have balance. We have to embrace both. Or we will have, there are ramifications when you basically discard the importance of having balance between two opposing things. We shouldn't be looking at the genders as opposing, but somehow we've been programmed to do that. Yeah. Anyway, this is also a non-ratified amendment. And this is basically what I was just saying. This is the attempt that they had in Washington, D.C. becoming a state. But what they tried to do is they tried to do it as a constitutional amendment. Now, if you understand the terms and definitions of the contract, which we've gone through this past summer on the ratification debates, and we will go through this even more the next time we go through in the middle of winter, and it'll be a completely fresh look as we do this time, what we're going to prove to you is that the framers laid it out so that D.C., the seat of the federal government, would not be a state. So in other words, the terms and definitions of the contract in creating this District of Columbia, it was to be autonomous. It was to not have any representation. It was literally to be the servant of the states. And so that's why it was not to be a servant of a state as while it was trying to be a servant of all the states. And what they're trying to do is they're just trying to get as many votes that they possibly can to protect what little edge that the secular progressives can create. Anyway, here goes the amendment. Section 1, for purposes of representation in the Congress, election of the president and vice president, in other words, the electors, for representation of the electors, and Article 5 of this Constitution, the district constituting the seat of government of the United States shall be treated as though it were a state. In other words, shall be treated as though it were a state. It's making it a state. And because it's not a state, and because it is denied that within the Constitution, this is really the only way they can actually make D.C. something like a state. Because the whole process of statehood is that a state must petition to become a state, but D.C. is constrained from that. The exercise of the rights and powers conferred under this article shall be by the people of the district constituting the seat of government, and as shall be provided by the Congress. The 23rd article of amendment to the Constitution of the United States is hereby repealed. Section 4. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of 3/4 of the states within 7 years from the date of its submission. So in other words, they killed this by putting this, so they actually have to redo this amendment and they have to resubmit this for this to happen. But the problem with this is that what they're trying to do is they're trying to create autonomy for the District of Columbia to become a state, but they're not allowing it to really be a state. It just becomes a, let's just call it the sycophant of the federal government. A yes man, somebody that's going to vote as what is best for the federal government and the seat of government. In other words, they're trying to say they need representation because they have interests already. They already have too much interest and too much power. They've already creeped out of the bottle and they're running the hen nest, or the chicken coop, I should say. Bottom line, I just want you to understand that one of the things that needs to be addressed as well, and we need to actually clarify, actually we don't need to clarify, the ratification base clarify it, but we need to start using the ratification base to help clarify the importance that the seat of government, Washington, D.C., is under strict legislative control of Congress. That if Congress is going to create a... or if there's going to be some law that changes red lights to blue lights, that you stop for blue lights instead, that has to come from Congress. Congress cannot abdicate that responsibility. The Constitution clearly says that they have, exclusive legislation. As a matter of fact, I'll pull it right up here because it is 17. And it says to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over the district. And I am here to tell you, because there is no amendment, the mayor, the city council, and everything that those pogues are doing in the District of Columbia is unconstitutional. There's never been an amendment to take away Congress's responsibility to have exclusive legislation in all cases. That's what the words are. I don't make this up. And so that's why understanding the Constitution and understanding where all these problems are stemming from, because they're actually just out there. Literally, the progressives, these secular godless progressives, are creating these automatons that are going to do their bidding. And we're going to have you do this. Instead, the state legislatures, or I should say, the legislatures of Congress have the responsibility of doing all this. And we will be back with some more of the amendments right after these two promos. So please stay tuned. We've got the good ones coming up.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so the last amendment we really want to talk about, and we've kind of glossed over this before, and you've heard me, and actually, I have an article, and I'm only going to reference, I'm not going to read the article, and I don't want to make an entire show like I have before over this, because previously, those of you who were inflicted with the pain of having me read the article, I don't think you need to have the pain inflicted upon you one more time. However, I do want to highlight this because we do have new listeners as we've been growing, and I want to make sure that all the new listeners coming on board understand that on reclaimingtherepublic.org, we have a constitutional articles page. And in the constitutional articles page, we have the distilled process of republic review. If you have not read that, and you hear these in the promos, but you need to read these articles. These articles are eye-openers, and some of these, and in essence, the reason why I've written some of these to talk, one, about the solution itself, and to be very frank about, you know, how the Constitution was defined and how, you know, we need to align to these paradigms and these concepts to further understand and actually start applying the same kinds of principles that the framers applied. Like, nobody understood the concept of a standing army. Well, you know, it's bad because a standing army means perpetual war. No, no, no. As we learn in reading the ratification debates, and as we start really talking about the reality of what a standing army does in the state or in the empire, just like in the British Empire, when the king was able to enforce his own laws, he shut down forests like Sherwood Forest, we hear in the story. Those forests all of a sudden became the property of the crown, and you shall not hunt there, and you shall not be able to pillage and, you know, feed yourselves. You must, you know, do the work and, you know, control, you know, because back in those days they had a mercantile system, and the king would actually say, you're going to grow this, you're going to grow this, and you'll grow that. And when the colonies were established, the crown actually expected states to produce very specific goods like tobacco and so forth. I want you to understand how insidious Britain is. And I'm only going to take a second on this. Britain, it was so insidious that they became the opium pushers on China. And why do you think China is backdooring fentanyl and all of these dangerous drugs into America? Because this is what they learned from Britain in how to undermine a society and creating these dependencies on these very addictive drugs. Because that's exactly what Britain did. Britain started exchanging, instead of paying for, Britain was exchanging opium for tea. And the Chinese population actually got addicted to it. Not all of them, but enough of it to where I don't think they called him a king, but whoever the ruler of the Chinese emperor, the dynasty was at the time, he actually said, hey, we've got to stop this. Britain is destroying us. And so what Britain did in response is they took their gunboats and they went right up their big rivers, the Yangtze or whatever some of their big rivers are. Forgive me for being bad with names, but I at least I'm honest. I tell you this. Anyway, this British boat went up this river and actually just shot up all of these towns, killed people and so forth. In other words, it's almost like they were playing the very bad pusher and said, look, you will be exchanging because we want your tea and you're going to take this opium. And what the emperor said was, we're not taking opium anymore. We want to actually, you pay us in silver from now on. And so it was a very bad time in the British Empire, but I am here to tell you that China had learned its lesson and they are using those exact same tactics as they've become the insensitive communists that they are. Anyway, I'm running out of time. The amendment we want to talk about is the 17th Amendment. We want to talk about the rescission of the 17th Amendment. And so if you look at the 17th Amendment, the first thing that I really want to kind of point out is that the amendment itself was possibly, and there's more evidence by, I believe his name's Bob Benson, he has proven that there's evidence that this was not properly ratified, which is a separate issue in itself. I like looking at every amendment that we have as a legitimate amendment, and we will move forward. And with republic review, we will audit and determine whether these amendments are legitimate. So with the 14th Amendment, the 17th Amendment, the 16th Amendment, every single amendment in the republic review process, the states have to validate that they legitimately and constitutionally ratified. Why am I saying this? Because Oregon, I believe during the 16th Amendment and possibly the 17th Amendment, did not sit, or at least I know in the 16th, I think Bob Benson proved that the election, so they did not vote because they were not in session to ratify the 16th Amendment. And so when the 16th Amendment was looming for ratification, the people of Oregon voted out enough of the progressives that it would not have been ratified in the new session moving forward. So Oregon pulled a quick one. And instead of swearing in before the session, they said, we will swear in after we take care of the old business of the ratification. So while these people were not allowed to actually go into session because they were duly elected by the people of Oregon, what ended up happening was these progressives who were voted out were basically pulled the wool over everybody's eyes and unconstitutionally and illegally ratified an amendment when they were not the duly elected people to do this. So anyway, that's why we have to actually audit all of this stuff, because we need to have ground truth. We need to know exactly what is legitimate, what isn't, so that we can correct those things. Because there's some people that say the 14th Amendment is illegitimate. I believe it is based on the research, because it was ratified by the northern states first. And so they said, well, they needed the, people don't understand that the states that seceded, they're not a part of the union. You don't need their approval or ratification. And so when they came in, they automatically had to, because They are now, if they want to become a state in the union, they have to accept the Constitution and all the ratified amendments. Anyway, the important thing to really understand about the 17th Amendment and the essence of what it was doing and undermining was the construction of Congress. The legislative branch was designed with two houses representing different constituents. Bottom line, as I've told you before, the constituents are sovereigns. If you understand the representation in America, representation is not representation of the people alone. The Roger Sherman Compromise was to recognize that we have sovereigns, and not just people are sovereigns. People create governments. They create county governments, they create state governments, and we created this national government under the divine inspiration of the divine hand of providence, of the Lord himself. And so what we were doing then is recognizing that the states had a voice and a responsibility to be able to have effect and control over things that would truly affect them. And so in this concept of this recognizing the sub-element of government as a sovereign, the states received representation, and in doing so, this is how they obtained suffrage, because their senators were supposed to vote as their advocate, and or I should say as their proxy. That's the correct word. So anyway, as the 17th Amendment established this, there's this thing, and I've gone over this, and we've covered this through this process, that there's this thing in the Article 5 of the Constitution. It's called the Amendment Protection Clause in Article 5, and this is what it states, quote, "No state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage or right to vote in the Senate." This clause guarantees that the Senate, in other words, the state legislature for the states, which are the constituents of the senators or the direct representatives of these sovereigns, must consent to actually losing their right to vote. So the Amendment Protection Clause protected the states from an amendment just like the 17th Amendment, unless the 17th Amendment struck that one clause out, and it didn't. Therefore, what they did was it created a direct conflict, because the 17th Amendment says that you can't, you know, the state legislatures do not have suffrage and they're not going to be represented anymore. They'll be representatives of the people. Well, now what the Constitution and what it says is that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage. Okay. Understanding that a state can't be deprived, and that is still in the Constitution. That is the supreme law, as well as that the people shall vote for. So in other words, or consequently, the following states are the states that never gave consent or relinquished its suffrage in the Senate and are still constitutionally capable of electing their own senators, which is Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, South Carolina, Virginia, and Utah. So this is why we need to get these states company, and we'll talk more about this down the road. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.